My name is Derek, and I'm a freelance writer. I don't make a lot of money, but I make enough to get by. I have a few steady clients that I work for, but I'm always looking out for more gigs. Recently, I had some minor surgery, and I needed money fast. I looked everywhere, but I couldn't find anything. Then someone recommended that I check out the writing gigs that are posted on Craigslist. I'd never used Craigslist before because I figured that a lot of the postings on there are a little sketchy, but I was desperate. Right away, I found a post for a writing assistant that paid really good money. I emailed the client that I was interested, and he said that the job had to be done in person at his house. Normally, I would have said no, but I ended up agreeing. After all, it was a lot of money for some easy work. The client's name was Robert, and he lived pretty close to my house. I drove over to his place, making sure that I had pepper spray in my pocket just in case. His house was a lot nicer than mine. He greeted me at the door and seemed like a normal person. He gave me a quick tour of the house, and then he led me to a work table covered in sealed envelopes. He handed me a list of names and said that all I had to do was write down the names on the envelopes. That was it. No addresses, just names. I tried to ask him what was inside the envelopes, but he smiled and said, don't worry about it. So for the next few hours, I sat at the table and copied a different name onto each envelope. I didn't see Robert the entire time. Aside from getting some cramps in my hand, it was the easiest job I'd ever done. By the time Robert came back, it was already night. I was so focused on the work that I hadn't noticed the time. He thanked me for working so hard and asked if I wanted to crash in his guest bedroom for the night. I thanked him, but I really just wanted to go home. He gave me an envelope filled with cash, including an extra $300 for my, and I'm quoting here, terrific penmanship. I went back home and didn't really think about it after that. I had all the money I needed to cover my bills. Then, a few days later, I was scrolling through the local news when I saw an article about a group of women who'd gone missing in my area. All the names seemed familiar. It took me a second to realize that they were all on Robert's list. I considered calling the police, but I decided against it. After all, it could have been just a coincidence. And if the letters were somehow connected to the disappearances, I didn't want to implicate myself. I decided to just let it go. But over the next few days, I started looking for reports of more disappearances. And there were a bunch. And all the missing persons had names I remembered. I knew it wasn't just a coincidence. The next weekend, Robert emailed me again, asking if I wanted to come back and do more work for him. I know I should have refused, but I was just too curious. So I accepted. And later that day, I was back at his house, working on another pile of envelopes. Once again, Robert left the room as soon as I started working. This time, I secretly took a photo of the new name list on my phone, and I pocketed one of the letters without writing any name on it. I didn't want to open the envelope while I was there in case he had security cameras watching me or something. When I was finished, Robert came back, paid me, and I left. When I got home, I checked to make sure that I was alone, and I opened the envelope. There was a single note card inside, but all it had was a happy face drawn in black marker. This whole thing was getting stranger and stranger. Still curious, I drove to the police station and showed them the list of names that I'd saved on my phone. I told them everything that had happened so far and explained that if any of these people are reported missing, then they need to go to Robert's house. The guy looked at me like I was insane, but he saved the list, and he said he'd let me know if anything happened. I went back home and tried to forget about it. I did what I could. I still had that blank envelope and note card sitting on my counter. Less than 3 hours later, I got a call from the officer saying that two of the people on the list had already been reported missing, one from his own backyard, and the other on the way home from school. I started to freak out, but he assured me that they'd figure out what was going on. He'd already sent someone to Robert's house. That night, I couldn't sleep. I was confused and scared, and I couldn't stop thinking about that stupid happy face on the note card. What did it mean? By 2 in the morning, I heard footsteps from somewhere inside my house. Had Robert come for me? I reached for my phone on the end table, but it wasn't there. I realized that I'd left it charging in the living room. I couldn't call for help, and I didn't have a way out of my room. I was trapped. So I very quietly got out of bed and walked to my bedroom door. I locked it, and then very slowly dragged my dresser in front of the door. I crouched down and waited. I could still hear the footsteps outside. They were louder now, probably from my hallway. Whoever was inside my house was walking right to me. I waited for the longest time, barely able to breathe, until the footsteps stopped outside my door. Everything was silent for a while, and then the intruder started slowly scratching on the other side of the door. He knew that I was here. He was taunting me. "Go away!" I screamed. The scratching got louder, more insistent. Then the whole door shook. The intruder slammed against it. I backed away and watched as an axe slammed at the door. Then it slammed again. He was cutting his way into my room. The hole in the door got big enough for me to see through it. The man on the other side was wearing a blank white mask with a happy face drawn in marker, just like the note card. He was huge, too, well over 6 feet tall. Robert was much shorter, so it couldn't be him. "Stop!" I screamed. The man in the mask looked at me through the hole in the door. He cocked his head to the side, like he was studying me. God, I never should have taken that envelope. Then he reached through the hole and started pushing my dresser out of the way. I couldn't believe how strong he was. I knew that if he made his way inside my bedroom, there was no way I'd be able to fight him off. With one big swipe, he pushed the massive dresser onto its side. Then he grabbed the door handle and twisted off the lock, pushed the door open. By then, I was cowering against the wall, too scared to move. He walked into my room, his axe hanging from one hand. "Who are you?" I whimpered. "What do you want?" Then police sirens blared through the air. The masked man froze. Then he dropped the axe, turned around, and left as if nothing had happened. I was in a complete state of shock when the policeman came inside. The officer I'd talked to earlier said that my neighbor had reported a break-in at my address. He recognized me from earlier, so he knew that this was serious. I asked him if he saw the man with the happy face mask, but he shook his head. The man had left before they arrived. I asked if they had gotten any information out of Robert, but he said that Robert's house was empty when they visited him. I walked with the police back into my living room. I wanted to show them the happy face card, but it was gone. They had a deputy wait outside my house for the rest of the night in case the attacker came back. He didn't. It's been 3 days now, and I don't know if I'm safe or if that man will come back for me. I still don't understand what happened. The only thing I know for certain is that I never should have taken that envelope.
I had just lost my job and was desperately seeking a replacement when I saw the ad on Craigslist. I had already applied to several positions with little luck, and had turned to Craigslist at the suggestion of a friend who had scored his own gig by responding to an ad on the website. I never used it before, but I figured it was worth a shot and began scrolling through local adverts. Most of them turned out to be duds, but there was one that seemed promising. It was a position as a data entry clerk at a local office, and it matched some of the descriptions from my previous job, so I thought I would give it a shot. I responded to the ad with an expression of interest, and they got back to me almost immediately, asking for my resume and a couple of details. At this point, nothing seemed out of the ordinary. The person I was speaking to seemed professional and punctual with their messages, and the ad itself seemed legit. The only thing I didn't do, which in hindsight was foolish, was check out the company itself. I'd never heard of it before, but I assumed it was one of those big offices that I usually passed by on my way through town. Plus, I was desperate, so I didn't waste too much time on the fine print. After a couple of back and forth messages, they invited me for an interview and sent me an address with a time, 10 a.m. the very next morning. I remarked how fast everything had happened, but even that didn't raise my suspicions. I figured they must have just been as eager to fill the position on their end, and they seemed confident I was the ideal candidate. Nothing was set in stone, of course, until the interview itself. The next morning, I woke up early and got ready for the meeting. I put the address into the GPS app on my phone and tried to figure out which bus to take. The location wasn't where I had expected it to be. Instead, it seemed to be a smaller office complex downtown. Regardless, I didn't want to waste the opportunity, so I left my apartment and hurried to catch the next bus to the other side of town. The bus stopped a short walk away from the office, and I was already a bit early, so I decided to check out the area. The location was ideal, given it was only a 20-minute ride on public transport from my apartment. Although, the area gave me an odd vibe. There wasn't anyone else around, and there were no cars except for a gray minivan parked up the street, the windows tinted. Feeling a little uneasy, I decided to head inside. The office seemed new, but it was oddly sparse. The reception especially was almost empty, except for a few plastic chairs and a potted plant that looked somewhat crumpled. There was a man sitting behind the desk, tapping his fingers against the keyboard, who glanced up when I entered. He didn't smile at me. Hello. I'm here for an interview for the clerk position. He stood up and nodded. Follow me. That's when my unease grew, and a flicker of doubt wormed its way into my chest. He hadn't even asked for any name or identification, and his hospitality was less than ideal. I shrugged it off and followed him through a door leading to a stairwell. As we walked, I couldn't help but wonder why the place felt so empty. I didn't see anyone else, nor did I hear them. No voice, no clacking keys, no coffee machines whirring. Officers weren't usually dead silent. He led me up a flight of stairs to another small reception area. Like the one downstairs, this place was just as empty and sparsely furnished. There was nobody else there. Please, take a seat. Okay, thank you, I said, watching him disappear back the way he had come. I looked around and took a seat. Everything had an almost clinical feel to it. I considered the possibility that the business was a new startup, and that was why the place didn't feel as lived in yet. But it still seemed weird. Where was everyone? I tapped my foot softly against the carpet, my anxieties rising. Maybe I should make an excuse and leave. Something about this place just didn't feel right to me. But it was the only job I'd applied for that had actually gotten back to me. If I didn't give it a chance, I would go back to ground zero, struggling to pay my increasing apartment rents. I really needed a job. Deciding to stick with it, I smoothed a hand over my skirt and took a deep breath. A few minutes later, a door clicked open and a man walked out. He was wearing a suit and slacks, but the edges were crumpled, as though he had donned them in a hurry. I stood up and greeted him with a smile. Hello, I'm Erica, I introduced, offering my hand. He took it with a weak shake and led me into the office without a word. The setup was simple, a desk with a computer and some files on the table. I tried not to let my gaze linger, but the computer looked like an old model, and when I glanced at the monitor, it wasn't even turned on. Take a seat, the man instructed, pointing to one of the plastic chairs. I did as he said, shuffling my feet nervously as he closed the door behind us. I swallowed back the lump in my throat. All right, Erica, just a few questions, he said, grabbing a sheet of paper from the desk and running his gaze over it. I tried to quell my anxieties and answer his questions as best as I could, but every nerve in my body was screaming that something was wrong. The questions seemed fairly normal to start with. But then they became odd, not the normal questions you would expect in an interview like this. Do you have any underlying health conditions? I stared at him. Sorry? Do you have any health conditions? Illnesses? Anything like that? he repeated, and I shook my head. No, nothing that would affect my work, I answered. Okay, what about your family life? Do you live alone? I'm not sure how that's appropriate, I stuttered out, a frown creasing my brows. The man flicked his gaze above the paper in his hand, fixing me with a firm look that made my heart beat a little faster out of fear. It's a simple question, really, he said. Do you have a partner, or do you live alone? He was still looking at me, his gaze sharp and expectant. Somehow, I didn't think it was a good idea to tell him I lived alone, so I lied. I have a boyfriend. We live together, I said, my voice quivering a little. A shadow fell across his face, but then it was gone before I could figure out why he was there. Before he could ask the next question, I stood up. I'm sorry, maybe this job isn't right for me after all, I blurted, turning around and reaching for the door. The man was quicker and didn't let me open the door. The interview isn't over, he said in a low voice. I gave a start, my heart thudding in my chest. Wasn't he going to let me leave? I've changed my mind, I said as firmly as I could, despite the dread in my chest. Please, let me leave before I call the police. For a tense moment, I didn't think he would move, but finally he stepped back, taking his hand off the door. Without another word, I threw the door open and ran out of there. The man at the downstairs reception watched me leave without saying anything. The whole time, I didn't see another person. I pushed through the doors out onto the street, almost tripping over my own feet in my haste to get out of there. The gray minivan was still parked down the road, and I debated taking a picture of its registration, but I didn't want to linger there any longer than I had to. I didn't calm down until I was back at my apartment, and I phoned my friend to let him know what had happened. It was only a few weeks later that I came across a news article talking about human traffickers using fake job advertisements as a way to lure victims. Is that what had almost happened to me? Had I almost been the victim of a human trafficking ring? Given how suspicious the entire interview had been, it would have surprised me. I just hope nobody else is ever in a situation as desperate and foolish as I was to fall for their lies. It was one of those days when time traveled slowly, crawling with such a fullness that made the hands itch for some excitement. I had eaten and drank from dawn until late in the afternoon, and I'd seen the recent psychological thriller that had just come out on Netflix. My house was neatly clean, and an incense had been lit to keep it smelling wonderful when I found myself in front of my computer, scrolling through items on Craigslist that I wanted to get. Some of the vendors had good stuff, but none caught my eyes like the one from a vendor, Julie Salazar, who had a fine bike that she wanted to sell at a steep price. I confessed that I was more fascinated by the audacity of the price than anything else. It was not a neat-looking bike, and it looked rather ordinary, but it was expensive. I assumed it was a joke, and decided to get in on it by texting the number attached to the ad. My fingers typed away without a thought on my screen, without thinking clearly, and it was not until I was done before I read what I had written. It made sense, a jest for a jest. How quickly can you get this bike to me if I paid this sum? I had written and turned my attention back to the Craigslist platform for a good couple minutes, not more than 10, before my phone chimed with the notification of an incoming message. Her response was polite. She said if it was around her area, she could get it to me before dusk, as she badly needed the cash. As soon as I get the cash, I can transport the bike to you, her message read. I knew I didn't want the bike, but the temptation lingered. I asked her for the specification of the bike. She mentioned she would have to look somewhere for it, as it had been a while since she had bought it. I told her I'd wait. She went offline and reappeared with a message that relayed everything she knew about the bike and read from the manual. She added that she had bought it for her teenage son and he didn't need it anymore. I asked why. She said he died in a car accident and the money was for funeral costs. I flushed with guilt. She sounded sincere, even though I could not have imagined sensing emotions from text. My fingers hovered over the screen for a moment as I processed whether to cut the joke off or to simply carry on. From better sense, I decided it was unwise to continue the joke as I had had no idea, despite how ridiculous the price was. I mentioned it to her. Then, I dropped my phone. Moments later, my phone chimed again. Is this some sort of sick joke? My heart skipped and I scowled, staring straight at my screen in amusement as to what this might mean. I held my breath and sent a reply, telling her I had found a better alternative to her bike on the basis of price. Her response was almost instant. Do you have any idea what you have done? You have wasted my time. I can't get that back. Now I have to get back at you for taking me for a fool. I will hack you from limb to limb, pig. Blood stopped in my veins as I struggled to process the purport of the message. I broke out sweating. It was a threat, texted over phone, but the intensity of her emotions seemed to break the barrier that made tension palpable. Trickling globules around my face wound around my beard and down my neck. In a way, I acknowledged the threat, but I was unfazed by the thought of a stranger sending a warning at me. I blocked the number and continued on Craigslist with no mind of it. An hour later, I made a mistake when I answered the door. The noise from outside of my house drew my attention, a car speeding up and down the street until it finally stopped across my house. The Toyota was unassuming, resembling a soap. The rider's maneuvering steer on the vehicle lent a punishing screech on the tar in front of my building when she halted. Black hair, black denim pants, and a pair of boots on her feet. I saw the rider walk up to the front of my door with a hand behind her. I assumed she was mistaken, but she knocked on my door. I had no thoughts about the Craigslist incident when I saw this rider. I was rather pissed at someone coming to my door at such a time of day. "Who are you?" I asked, opening the door slightly to gaze upon the stranger at my door. "Are you Jesse?" she asked, with a smirk on her face. I nodded my head. She whipped her hand from her back, revealing she had carried a hatchet which I ducked from nimbly. The blade sunk into my door with a hissing noise, and she plucked away at the edge. I watched in horror as the stranger bulked her frame up and rushed towards me with intent, even though I had no idea who she was. My ears pounded with the noise of my heart beating in my chest. "Who the hell are you?" I asked, tumbling away in fright and confusion at her overwhelming ferociousness coming straight at me. "You go around Craigslist, fooling people and wasting their time?" she asked. "People like you drive me over the edge all day, bitch, and I will make sure there is less of you anywhere." Alone, face to face with the crazed woman wielding a hatchet, it felt as though I was staring death in the face on the day I least expected it. The horrible feeling of my stomach collapsing on itself and my mind racing quickly to find a solution to the chaos I had suddenly found myself in left me numb. I was damp with sweat and a cold feeling seized the tip of my fingers. I had never felt such symptoms for my anxiety, and the thought paralyzed me. I knew I had to put something between us both, and I could only think of my room. I turned around and raced for the stairs, with her breath coming down my neck. In a case of sudden luck that I'd not expected, I sensed my feet slip on the stairs from my sweaty body dripping on the platform. I planted a firmer grip on the stairs. She did not, and it was too late before she realized. She slipped face first and landed with her nose slamming on the edge of the stairs. Her body suddenly went limp, rolling down the stairs to the floor. I thought about returning to the floor to help her, but it made no sense. So I went for my phone and called the cops instead. The cops came for her in a matter of minutes, resuscitated her, and took her into custody. I made sure to never forget the name or the face if we should ever cross paths again. Julie Salazar.
It was midnight, and I sat across from Jackie in an otherwise empty subway. She was as pretty as always, which made all of this so much harder. I was going to ask her out. After months of being broken up, I couldn't stand it anymore. I needed her back in my life. I gulped down a bite of my sandwich. "Jackie," I said, "I'm really glad you agreed to meet me. I missed you. I want us to be together." The words waited on my tongue. I'd even practiced them in front of my bathroom mirror, but they wouldn't come out. The awkward silence hung in the air. Jackie grimaced. She knew what I wanted to say, and once again, I disappointed her. This was how our relationship ended in the first place. She wanted a man who was strong and assertive. I tried, of course, but I was always second-guessing myself. Even now, when I knew that she wanted me to ask her out again, the words just wouldn't form in my mouth. I lost all nerve, looking down at the half-finished sandwich in front of me. Then, an awful scream erupted through the restaurant. It came from the back of the kitchen, behind the metal door. It was loud, desperate, and horrible. I looked at Jackie, who was as shocked as I was. I started. But what was I gonna say? What could I say? John, she said. Do something. I pulled out my phone and called 911. As I talked with the dispatcher and explained the situation, Jackie stared at me. She was not happy. I clicked off the phone. They'll be here in 5 more minutes, I told Jackie. But what if, she started. Then, with a gulp, she pushed herself out of the chair and ran past the counter into the kitchen. I tried to stop her, but she was already gone. I stayed at the table and waited, but the entire restaurant was completely silent. It felt unnatural, like a tomb. My pulse raced. Why did Jackie go back there alone? Was she okay? Was she hurt? After a full minute of waiting, I couldn't stand the uncertainty of the silence. I jumped up and raced into the back of the kitchen. I didn't have a plan, and my brain was too frantic to think of anything. But I pushed through the swinging metal door, and instantly, I tripped over something big and soft. I didn't fall, instead grabbing onto a shelf of bread to steady myself. There, right at my feet, was the worker who had made our sandwiches. His body was stretched flat on the ground. His head was turned at an unnatural angle. Oh God, I muttered. The man was dead. I looked up and saw Jackie cowering in the far corner. Standing over her was a large man in a ski mask. He held a knife inches away from her face, and she sobbed silently. This was my moment to act. This was what Jackie had always wanted me to do. She wanted me to man up. I jumped over the body and ran straight towards the masked man. He spun to face me, but he didn't have enough time to swing the knife. I collided with him, knocking us both forward. We skidded across the floor. I didn't see where the knife went. As I held the man down, and as he struggled to push me off, Jackie jumped to her feet. Run! I shouted, but she didn't. She just stood there, frozen, watching us. She could have left at any time, but I guess the fear kept her in place. I saw the knife sitting just underneath the bread cart. As I reached for it, the man pushed himself to his feet. Once again, he ran towards Jackie, and I grabbed him by the leg. He fell again. I had the knife in my hand now, but he grabbed my wrist. We wrestled over it. He was much stronger than I was, but I didn't let go. He pushed me backwards, and we reached the kitchen door, both of us struggling for the knife and sidestepping the body on the floor. We made it back to the main area of the restaurant. Using one hand, the man grabbed a bottle of mustard and squirted it at my face. It didn't get into my eyes, thankfully, but I was knocked off balance. I fell against the sandwich counter and collapsed onto the tile. His large hands grabbed my arms. It was painful, but still felt like he was holding back some of his strength. He twisted his body to the side and I pinned him down. I crouched to the top of him, one hand wrapped around his throat and the other holding the knife. I raised it up. The man, rather than pushing me off of him, reached for his mask and revealed his face. And boy, oh boy, was he a handsome man. And oddly, looked familiar. As if I'd seen him passing in some club or party. His eyes pleaded for me to let him go. Behind him, the metal door swung open and Jackie walked back in. She saw me on top of her now maskless attacker. She shouted, "John, do it!" I raised the knife even higher. Would I really follow through with this? Was I gonna stab him? If I didn't, he'd just wriggle out of my grip and attack us again. I had to stop him. I had to be confident. "Man the hell up!" Jackie shouted at me. As I lowered the knife, building all the courage I had, the glass doors opened and a policeman ran inside. He was a young guy, not much older than me, and he pointed the gun right at us. "Hands up!" he shouted. But before I could throw the knife down and do as the officer said, Jackie screamed. "He has a knife! God, he's not stopping!" The next thing I heard was an earth-shattering bang that shook the glass walls and echoed throughout the restaurant. I didn't feel the pain of the bullet at first, but I felt its force. My body toppled to the side, landing hard on the tile. The knife clattered to my side. I grabbed my arm, feeling warm blood ooze out of me. That was when the pain came. Not just pain, but a full body coldness that washed over me. I was shot. I was bleeding out. And through the sparks of light dancing across my vision, I saw the other man run towards Jackie. For a second, I thought he was going to attack her. But instead, he wrapped her in a protective hug. She laid her head on his shoulder, sobbing. The cop screamed at me, "Don't move!" I tried to tell him this was a big mistake, that he shot the wrong guy, but I was in too much pain. "It was terrible," Jackie told the cops. "He just went crazy and attacked my boyfriend, and I think he killed someone in the kitchen, too." I looked at the ski mask crumpled up on the floor next to me. Then I took one long look at Jackie, a look filled with hatred. She smiled back. I was put behind bars after I recovered. That evil woman, whom I loved, was stupid enough to frame me as a killer.